One afternoon years ago, I had 15 prisoners in my court. I was advising them of their constitutional rights, and all of a sudden one of the women prisoners yelled out, "I don't recognize you." And I looked at her and thought, "Well, I don't recognize you either." She goes, "I don't recognize you. I don't recognize your jurisdiction." I said, "You are a mere mortal. I am a god. I do not recognize mere mortals. I do not recognize your jurisdiction." Then she made the big mistake. She said, "I only recognize Washington and Lincoln." So I said, "Well, what about Thomas Jefferson? You got to recognize Thomas Jefferson. He's the father of the Declaration of Independence." "I don't recognize him. He's just a mere mortal. I only recognize Washington and Lincoln." "So what about James Madison? You've got to recognize him. He's the father of the Constitution." She goes, "No, he's just a mere mortal. I don't recognize him. I only recognize Washington and Lincoln." "So what about John Adams? Everybody recognizes John Adams." Then she says, "You are starting to annoy me." Said, "You are a mere mortal. I am a god. I am strong and powerful, and I do not recognize you. I do not recognize your jurisdiction." So when there's any complications, I do what I usually do. I appointed the public defender to represent her and continue the case. Weeks later, I happened to run across the public defender who was assigned to her case. I said, "Oh, how did that case turn out?" I said, "Oh, it was really tough. She wouldn't cooperate with me because I was a mere mortal." And then he said, "She only recognizes three mortals." I said, "Three mortals?" I said, "Yes. Washington, Lincoln, and Jefferson." So I had a big impact on her life. So today let's talk about Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson is recognized as the most influential of the founding fathers. He's also regarded as the most brilliant founding father. However, some historians brand him as the most hypocritical of the founding fathers. So is Jefferson a hero or a hypocrite? Let's take a look at his life and come to some conclusions. First off, on his personal and family life, he was born in 1743 in Shadwell, Virginia. He was the third of 10 children. In 1772, at the age of 29, he married Martha Skelton, a 23-year-old widow. She was well-educated, well-read, was a skilled pianist. They were a perfect match. He was deeply in love, and this was the happiest time of Jefferson's life. She was sickly. She bore six children. Only two of them lived into adulthood. 10 years after the marriage, she passed away at the age of 33. But before she passed away, and this is significant, she made 39-year-old Thomas promise that he would never remarry. So that's a tough promise to make at age 39 for someone in his position. So upon her death, Thomas was grief-stricken, went into a major depression. Well, after her death, he had a long-term relationship we know now with his slave, Sally Hemings. She had six children, probably most of whom were fathered, if not all, by Thomas Jefferson. Four of the children survived into adulthood, and Thomas Jefferson granted them their freedom. Sally remained with him until his death, and upon his death, Jefferson's daughter granted Sally her freedom. By occupation, Jefferson was a lawyer and plantation owner. He was admitted to the bar in Virginia in 1767. As a young lawyer, he specialized in litigating cases on behalf of freedom-seeking slaves. And he used the doctrines in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence and natural law to argue his cases in favor of their freedom. At age 21, he inherited 5,000 acres, including Monticello, meaning Little Mountain. And he also inherited 40 slaves. A year after his marriage, Martha's father died, and he and she inherited another 135 slaves and 11,000 acres of plantation and substantial debts. Well, by preoccupation, Jefferson was a politician and statesman. He served in the Virginia State Legislature for 6 years. He introduced legislation to allow slave owners to grant their slaves freedom without the permission of the governor. That legislation was defeated. He served as governor of Virginia, father of the Declaration of Independence. He was our ambassador to France. He served as the nation's first Secretary of State under George Washington. He was vice president under John Adams, served two terms as our third president. He is credited for the Louisiana Purchase, which increased the size of the United States 50%. That's an incredible impact for a president to have. He commissioned the Lewis and Clark Expedition and founded the first public university in the country. Most historians rank Jefferson as our fifth greatest president, behind Washington, Lincoln, FDR, and Teddy Roosevelt. And of course, he is immortalized on Mount Rushmore and the Jefferson Memorial. Now, in addition to being a lawyer, statesman, and politician, Jefferson excelled in 15 diverse fields of knowledge. He was an incredible genius. In 1962, President John F. Kennedy hosted a dinner for Nobel Prize winners. And in an introductory remarks to the Nobel Prize winners, he said, "I think this is the most extraordinary collection of talent and of human knowledge that has ever gathered together in the White House, with the exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone." A stranger who spent an evening at a traveler's lodge where Jefferson was staying made this comment: "When Jefferson spoke of the law, I thought he was a lawyer. When he talked about mechanics, I was sure he was an engineer. When he got into medicine, it was evident that he was a physician. When he discussed theology, I was convinced he must be a clergyman. When he talked about literature, I finally made up my mind that I had run into a college professor who knew everything." So in the 15 fields of knowledge where he excelled, first, Jefferson was a naturalist and a paleontologist. So in his works, Notes on the State of Virginia, he meticulously recorded plant and animal life, mountains, climate, fossils. He disproved many of the prevailing theories of the leading naturalists at the time. He was fascinated by and obsessed with fossils. So he turned the entryway at Monticello into a natural history museum where one could look at his fossils. One of the objectives of the Lewis and Clark expedition was to collect plants and fossils. And interestingly, Jefferson actually expected them to encounter living woolly mammoths. So he was disappointed when they didn't bring any mammoths back. As president, Jefferson worked hard to get paleontology accepted as a serious scientific subject, and he is called the father of American paleontology. Second, Jefferson was an economist and accountant. He was deeply involved in economics. He translated several works of the leading European economists. He was an advocate of free market policies, and he personally handled the accounting of Monticello. Unfortunately, Jefferson was a spendthrift when it came to his books and library and academic interests. And so as he did the accounting, he watched himself slowly go deeper and deeper into debt. And he finally referred to counting as the miserable arithmetic. Third, Jefferson was an expert cryptographer. He developed a cipher system, which is the basis of our codes we use to this day. He invented the Jefferson wheel cipher, which had 26 wheels with letters and numbers, and you could only break that code if you had an identical wheel, cipher wheel. And so he is basically one of the founders of American cryptography. Fourth, Jefferson was a renowned scholar and educator. He graduated from William & Mary College at the age of 19. He founded the University of Virginia, the first public university. He treasured his books. He said, "I cannot live without my books." He had a large library containing thousands of very expensive books. In the War of 1812, the British burned most of Washington, D.C., including the Library of Congress. So Jefferson agreed to sell at a cheap rate 6,000 of his books to restart the Library of Congress. If you go in the Library of Congress today, there's a special collection of the Jefferson books that you can actually see. He preferred reading the classics. He was fluent in reading seven languages, and he always preferred reading in the original language, not translations. So it's little wonder that he was called the Sage of Monticello. He was a serious scholar. We also find out he was a serious person. He didn't have a sense of humor, and he considered jokes and storytelling a complete waste of time. And so I'm not sure how many friends he had with that kind of attitude. And he made the comment, "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of men." Fifth, Jefferson was a musician. He learned to play the violin growing up. He taught himself the cello, and he sometimes performed recitals. He loved playing classical music. He complained that the current American music was in a deplorable state of barbarism. So he's a very serious person, like the classics. Six, Jefferson was a brilliant political philosopher. As you know, he's the father of the Declaration of Independence. He's also the mentor of James Madison, and Jefferson convinced James Madison of the necessity and most of the content of the Bill of Rights. Seventh, Jefferson was an outstanding architect. He designed the Rotunda of the University of Virginia. He designed and built Monticello. He also designed the Virginia State Capitol. And Monticello and the University of Virginia are now on the World Heritage List because of his architectural genius. And he declared that architecture was one of my favorite amusements. Eighth, Jefferson was a prolific writer and author. He translated several books. The Library of Congress has a collection of Jefferson papers, which includes 27,000 documents, including 18,000 personal letters of substance to historical figures. Ninth, Jefferson was an astronomer. He loved stargazing. He made sure astronomy was taught at the University of Virginia, and he designed and built the first observatory in America. Tenth, Jefferson was a theologian. Jefferson was a deist. He believed in a divine creator, but not one who interacted with mankind. He regularly attended the Church of England with his daughter. He created his own Bible called the Jefferson Bible, and he entitled it The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth, where he cut out all the references to Jesus' divinity or miracles. So he sometimes considered himself a Christian, but he did not believe that Jesus was divine or perform miracles. And so his Bible, he just cut those all out. He detested religions with professional clergies. 11th, and a lot of this is amazing, Jefferson was an inventor and mechanical engineer. He invented or developed the swivel chair, the pedometer, the folding chair, the dumbwaiter, the double acting doors, the spherical sundial, the iron plow, the revolving book stand, a seventh-day great clock powered by gravity, and a simultaneous writing machine where he could make duplicate copies of his letters. It would write as he wrote. For his inventions, he received several honorary degrees. Interestingly, when he served as Secretary of State, he also served as head of the U.S. Patent Office, and in his 8 years, he only granted 67 patents. But luckily, one of those patents was for Eli Whitney's cotton gin. Can you imagine if he didn't grant that patent, how things would have been a little different? So 12th, Jefferson was a linguist. He was fluent in speaking 5 languages and could read over 7 languages. Jefferson was also an archaeologist and anthropologist. He recorded with precision Native American ideas with objectivity, and he invented the archaeological technique of stratification, going down layers, and so he actually invented that for archaeology. He spent a lifetime collecting and cataloging Indian vocabularies, and he had Lewis and Clark collect linguistic records of all the Indian languages that they could. So on top of that, 14th, Jefferson was an expert in agronomy and horticulture. He was one of the first Americans to use crop rotation. He was one of the first Americans to use contour plowing to reduce erosion. He experimented with potential fertilizers, and he is recognized as America's first agronomist. On top of that, and finally, 15th and finally, he was a foodie. He was a gourmet in wines, and he tried to convince America to go to wine instead of whiskey and cider. He was somewhat successful. He told his slave, James Hennings, that if he learned French cuisine, he would give him his freedom. Also, Jefferson introduced the following food items to America, my favorites, ice cream, French fries, and macaroni and cheese. So an incredible man with a diverse expertise in a great number of fields. It is little wonder that for generations they often referred to Jefferson as a demigod. Now, Jefferson was not flawless. and his theories often bashed up against the practical realities. And so because of that, many historians consider him the greatest hypocrite among the founding fathers. And let's take a look at that, and let's talk about five areas where his beliefs crashed against the practical realities. So Jefferson was vocally and vehemently opposed to slavery. But he didn't push for slavery abolition during the time of the Declaration of Independence because the southern colonies wouldn't have joined the fight against the British and we wouldn't have won the war. During his prime, he didn't push for abolition because he needed his slaves and their labor for him to do all these wonderful things that he did. When he was president, he didn't push for abolition because he needed Congress on his side to help finance the Lewis and Clark expedition and the Louisiana Purchase. And in his senior years, he didn't push for abolition because he needed the financial and political backing for the University of Virginia, which he founded. So, and he accomplished, would not have accomplished a fraction of what he did had it not been for his reliance upon slave labor. So when someone confronted him on him speaking against slavery all this time and yet having slaves and doing nothing about it, he used the analogy, it's like holding a wolf by the ears. The wolf deserves to be set free, but self-preservation prevents it. So you have the theoretical Jefferson on one side and the practical Jefferson on another. A second area where there was a clash between his theories and practice was the University of Virginia experiment. He thought that college students had a certain amount of decorum. They could be trusted to act like adults, act like scholars, and therefore no code of honor or rules of conduct were necessary. So when he founded the University of Virginia, that was part of his founding, his dream, that we don't need a rule of conduct. These are mature scholars. But unlike his theory, the students were skipping class, and they were drinking in excess, and they're wasting hours partying. And one night, 14 students got drunk and disguised in masks, went on a rampage at the university. They struck one professor with a brick, and they beat another professor with a cane. So Jefferson was overcome by grief. In response, the college trustees had a special meeting. They invited Jefferson to speak. He was now 82 years of age and very frail. He asked to address the students. So in his remarks, Jefferson recalled the lofty principles and ideals upon which the university was founded. He said that he'd expected more from the students. He confessed that this was the most painful event in his lifetime. Suddenly, he stopped speaking. Tears welled up in his eyes. He was so overcome, he sat down and wept. The audience was so overcome that the 14 students who were disguised came forward and confessed, but the damage had been done. And so Jefferson's dream, theoretical dream, had turned into a practical nightmare. And so we see the clash between his theory and the practical realities. Another clash involved the Louisiana Purchase. So, the anti-Jeffersonians said that the President of the United States has no authority under the Constitution to expand or change the boundaries of the country. And that's true. Jefferson said, I agree, but I'm going to do it anyway. And so, like the current president with some of his executive orders, he said, I'm going to rely on my treaty power and do it anyway. Well, as we all know, it worked. We're glad he did that. But he recognized basically that he had no power and authority, and he was a strict constitutionalist, but he did anyway. Another area where his theories practiced with or clashed with reality involved the Barbary War. He was a pacifist. He was a peacemaker. You may recall he objected to the national bird being an eagle because that's a bird of prey. He wanted the national bird to be a dove, a bird of peace. Well, like today, the time came when radical Islamic pirates were capturing ships in the Mediterranean and demanding ransom. If you didn't pay the ransom, they would slice off their heads, just kind of like today, and cut their heads off. And so the Federalist Party developed a slogan, millions for defense, but not 1 cent for tribute. So Jefferson agreed and sent the Marines to the shores of Tripoli. to attack the Barbary pirates. So here's the pacifist sending the Marines. Some folklore, and it may be false, is that because of their tendency to saw off heads and chop off heads, the Marines added thick leather collars to their uniforms to protect their necks, and that's where we get the word leather necks. Now, that's folklore, so that may or may not be true, but it's a fun story. And so Jefferson, the pacifist, when he confronted with practical realities, sent in the Marines. Another interesting clash was involving federal judges. So Jefferson, when the country was founded, lobbied hard that the federal judges should be appointed for life. They should be immune from politics, from the tides of public opinion. And so Jefferson defeated John Adams for president. He was the vice president. John Adams expected to be in a 2 terms. Jefferson basically stabbed him in the back after 1 term ran against him, knocked John Adams out of office. Well, during the lame duck period, before Jefferson was sworn in, John Adams appointed as many anti-Jefferson judges as he could. Congress immediately ratified those midnight appointments, including John Marshall as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Well, to serve, the federal judges had to receive a commission that was given by the Secretary of State. John Marshall was the Secretary of State, but then when Jefferson became president, John Marshall was sworn as Chief Justice, and he hadn't served all of the commissions. So a person by the name of William Marbury didn't receive his commission. So when Jefferson became president, Marshall assumed that Jefferson would have Madison, his vice president, or Secretary of State, give the commissions, and Jefferson said, no, they're null and void. They weren't issued during Adams' administration. It's now my administration. They're null and void. And so Madison refused to give the commission to Marbury. So Marbury sued, and the most famous case, Supreme Court case in our country history, is Marbury versus Madison. So Marbury sued to force Madison to give him that commission so that he could serve. Well, John Marshall, who was giving the commissions, didn't recuse himself, interestingly. He helped decide the case. The Supreme Court agreed that Madison should have given the commission to Marbury, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the federal statute that Marbury relied upon was unconstitutional and void. Now, that came as a shock to everybody. No one had ever declared anything unconstitutional. Jefferson freaked out. He said the president and Congress are co-equal branches of government. Who gives the unelected Supreme Court the right to determine final constitutionality? And so Jefferson thereafter lobbied hard to have the federal judges reelected every 2 years, just like the House of Representatives. So you see the theoretical Jefferson, we want him for life, then it hits the fan, okay, every 2 years. So Jefferson was an idealist, but he was not an ideologue. And the country was founded by compromise, and he sometimes was willing to compromise his ideals so that he could be successful in the practical real world. Some people think that makes him a hypocrite. I don't. Ralph Waldo Emerson observed, consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And Thomas Jefferson was anything but a little mind. Well, in conclusion, history sometimes outdoes Hollywood, and this is what happened with the deaths of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. So Thomas Jefferson was John Adams' vice president. John Adams did a couple of things, like signing the Alien Sedition Act that Jefferson thought undermined free speech and religion. And so instead of waiting for Adams to serve a second term, Jefferson ran against him. Well, if you think today's elections are brutal, the election of 1800 was very brutal. Jefferson, while pretending to be a colleague and friend of Adams, was paying publishers under pseudonyms to attack Adams for incompetency, corruption, being anti-democratic. Adams' people printed articles saying that Jefferson was an anti-Christian pagan, he was an atheist, and a vote for Jefferson was a vote against God. So you look at today's elections, and it's not too much difference in some respects. So Jefferson felt that Adams betrayed some of the principles that they stood for. Adams felt that Jefferson betrayed him and their friendship, and Jefferson was elected. The night before the inauguration, Adams left Washington as a public insult to Jefferson, did not even participate in the inauguration. When Jefferson retired as president, he started writing John Adams some letters. Many of those letters were intercepted by Abigail Adams and destroyed. Finally, a mutual acquaintance of Jefferson and Adams hand-carried a letter from Jefferson to Adams. Jefferson kind of apologizing for how he treated Adams, and the relationship and friendship was reestablished. And so for the next 14 years, they wrote classic letters back and forth, debating public policy, politics, philosophy, some outstanding letters. Well, it started coming toward June 1826, the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson was in Monticello. He was very ill. He was delirious. He was fading in and out of consciousness. And for days, he would ask the question, is it the 4th? Referring to the 4th of July. He would get the answer, not yet. Finally, on the 4th of July, 1826, 50 years to the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson asked, is it the 4th? This time, he received the answer he was waiting for. They said, yes. Jefferson quietly passed away. A few hours later, in Massachusetts, on the same day, the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, John Adams died, and his final words were, Jefferson still survives. Well, these are great men. These are demigods. In my mind, they are heroes. They are flawed heroes, but I don't, friend, I'm hypocrites. But they are great men and heroes. And this nation and all of us owe a great debt of gratitude to Thomas Jefferson. Thank you.